Okay, that was a very enjoyable panel. I'll just open it up to the floor. If anyone wants to ask questions or make contributions, feel free.
It's tea time.
Or does everyone want their tea? Yeah. Jackie's giving me his phone number. Has anyone got any questions? Or
yeah. Just on point. After Wilson's Thunder Street, I was going to one sort of talk with Grammar School development at the time, and whilst there were sort of people sort of struggling in about sort of maybe struggled into the strike. And after Wilson made his Thunder Street, the people from sort of Finney, Top Mona, from where I know states, start coming to school wearing sponges in their lapels.
Right.
I mean, basically you do it like fear retribution.
You mean personally?
Yes.
I wondered what the speech was for.
Yes.
Why he made it. I mean, we were waiting for some sort of news or some sort of implementation of a policy, some direction to be given, and he just spongers and that was it and he was winning. What was all that about?
Were you listening as a unionist, a loyalist, or a neutral teacher? I mean, I'm sitting on the bog side saying what was that about? He's called us spongers. What did you all think?
I wondered what he was...
They're all sponges, the UWC?
Yes, I mean, follow the direction of loyalists.
I think it was generally acknowledged that Wilson...
Erskine?
Yeah, I'm still alive, yeah.
Erskine!
This is a reunion, Queen's 1860.
It was generally acknowledged that Wilson was told could not depend on the army to run power stations, filling stations, all the rest, but the army couldn't run Northern Ireland. And he out of total frustration, he made that stupid sponsor speech. That was the general belief in the Labour movement at the time, anyway. That the Labour people imagined that in some way armies could run a small country like Northern Ireland. The British Army couldn't even run Northern Ireland. It wasn't geared to do that. It couldn't run a power station. It couldn't, really effectively, it couldn't do anything. But Labour politicians lived this illusion that if you had the army behind the state could overthrow what was, to them, the most hideous rebellion of all, a workers' strike.
Yeah.
There must have been enormous frustration behind Wilson's whole thing. I had a role very briefly at this time of trying to lobby in the central lobby in Westminster. And I remember Stan Orme and Kevin McNamara coming up to me in a rage and they said, "You've done it now. You have to cut the painter." And I said to him, "It's not a vote. And I didn't do it." The anger of Labour nationalists, Labour people with a nationalist inclination, was incredible. The fact that this weapon, along with the working class, was being used by what they saw as fascist unions. And Wilson shared that kind of view, I'd imagine.
But he'd been through Heath's winter of discontent, hadn't he?
Sorry?
Hadn't Wilson been through the winter of discontent under Heath?
He had, yeah.
When workers were on strike. Did that influence? Don't tell me loyalist. Obvious did that. Isn't that an awful insult to your IQ? Excuse me.
If Wilson really resented Ulster unions using the weapon of the working class, if you like, as Labour people saw it, they were so cleverly used to using these terms that...
No, but I mean, winter of the discontent, Britain was brought to a halt and people were cold. Here we are a few years later and there's the loyalists running down the power station. However, a response from that might have been only if the power station, we were told if power stations, once they switch off, they'll never switch on again. I never knew if that was true or not. But were the loyalists thinking the same way? a summer of discontent, we can control heat and light. It's all too long ago.
Well, I suppose you could say, you know, it's difficult to make a direct analogy, isn't it, between...
Not for me. Maybe.
The reason I think it's difficult to make a direct analogy is because the strike in Britain, okay, was the winter of discontent. Everywhere was closed down for 3 days. But you didn't have the level of social control by the strikers of what was happening on the streets. So, in other words, from what I've heard in Belfast, some people were being prevented from going to work, yeah?
Most people.
Yeah. So there was an actual... So the strike in Northern Ireland in 1974 was not analogous with the strikes in Britain of the previous year, because you had a whole different level of civil control or lack of control, which certainly was not... So yeah, it was a strike, but it was a strike with a considerably heavier and different input into it.
Well, I can't remember whether it started on a Wednesday or Thursday, and it wasn't all that effective. And then I think it was UWC issued a mandate on the Saturday saying nobody was to go to work from Sunday midnight. And that's why I said about the Monday morning, I didn't start being... That's when they said, you aren't going to work.
And that's had no work.
But it wasn't called by trade unions.
But listen, I think, you know, for those that were here this morning, you know, this was off its time. People had different experiences of it. If you were in somewhere like the Shankill, right, here are your chances. At that time, you were, forget about the strike for a minute, at that time in 1974, you went out, you had a good chance of being blown up. That was one possibility if you went out at all. You had no other option in the Shankill. You went out, you might come back and your house wasn't there anymore because a bulldozer had knocked it down. I'm only slightly exaggerating that. Or you could find out that there was a strike on. Now, it was no big deal that there was a strike on. And it was no big deal that you weren't going to work, because it was like the first few days difficult. But it was party time. It was an incredible sense of community. So people's experiences of this were different.
Yeah.
I would dispute with Henry that this was a fascist strike.
Yeah.
Not where I lived.
I didn't say it was fascist.
Henry did. And what I'm saying very clearly is where I lived, this was just part of a community reaction to something. And, you know, therefore, I think it's dangerous to be putting labels on these things. And I wouldn't lift it out of all proportion. It's the 40th anniversary today at this point. And I do think it's actually, sadly, it's a work in progress, because coming out of that strike was a consciousness from the Protestant working class, something of its power. I think Glenn talked about people feeling a bit bigger. He used another
term.
Would
you concede you used your muscles to enforce that strike, but that people were frightened and threatened?
I don't dispute that at all. But I'm just saying that there were things, you know, this should not be got out of the proportion. It was part of something awful that was happening right through that period, and out of which some good things came.
But Jackie, you're talking about your community and a cohesion within your community. It affected everybody right throughout here, and people were afraid. There's no question. For days, people were afraid. People had to go and find food wherever they could find it.
Yeah, but Henry,
all that I'm saying is
it was a very fearful time. People were afraid of their lives going out of the house as well. At that, you
yes,
know,
that's
not
true.
To,
yes,
just
exactly.
To
right,
so return to that question, Harold Wilson, again, because the one thing that was most galling of all to the Labour Party and to Labour leaders was that the trade union movement in Northern Ireland, trade union leaders could not take the workers back to the shipyard. And yet you had charismatic leaders like Sammy Scott and so on. But you had Len Murray been brought over by Billy Blaze, but not. You got a handful of people walking back to work in the shipyard. That's when Labour knew they were beaten by that strike.
Do you disagree with their attitude that Sunningdale was not great being imposed on us? That was a good, accurate analysis. The Free State coming out and them having tuppence. Come now, Erskine.
I'm not sure if you're interpreting me correctly.
I thought the Loyalists and Unionists were right to oppose Sonningham, if not in their actual methods of doing so, but I thought they were right. It was an awful agreement.
I'm sorry, I have to go. Can I just, I did say at the beginning that.
Before Johnny, would you like us to say something?
Give you a taxi.
I thought his analysis was very, very interesting, and I just was a wee bit disappointed in at the end because I thought he understood himself actually. I should make a declaration. The month that the State of the Shackle campaign was formed, I became the area housing manager for North Belfast, including the Shankill. I was involved in the redevelopment and had a lot of discussions with Johnny. And he finished up saying they stopped something happening, but they never managed to make something happen. Well, actually, I think they did make something happen, because I think the way the Shankill ultimately was done very much as a result of the crawl of food pressure. And I can tell you inside the housing executive, I would also talk to Harry McDonald. And I had the advantage of saying, you can't do that. They don't accept it up there any longer. You know, things need to change. So the fact that it was organised and the way it was organised as a broad basis, as a community organisation, allowed arguments to take place inside the machine as well as outside. So I think actually did make things happen.
I think you know, the Shankill's still there, but it's a rump of what it was, and the issues that we deal with now have a direct legacy. The legacy goes straight back there. We did try to learn lessons out of it, because I remember, anybody that remembers Peter Melchett, Lord Melchett, when he came in 1977, he had you know, got involved in those working class areas, and I remember him saying that you've been involved in protests too long. You know, it was about 3 years at that point, and he said you've been involved in protests too long. It's time you got involved in projects. And there was a lot of we started turning our minds to that, Tony, in that period, and we formed a local housing association that Erskine will well remember, and started getting involved in that, and there was youth training programs set up. And that sort of project stuff we got involved in, but it diverted us from an awful lot of other stuff. And really, the long tail of this has been actually getting into a sort of partnership. And I do see it as a thing that moved inexorably from that protest to projects into partnership. And that's very, very difficult. And I mean, we're not here to discuss the longer tail of this. All that I'm trying to say is that for me personally, I watched the UWC strike, even though I was living in it. I actually watched it and drew lessons from it as to how to run an effective campaign, which I think to a degree we did. Yeah.
Before you go, can I get one more question for you? You described it not as an event but a process, one that you think is still unfolding. And I was thinking about the way you described that period, you know, the perfect storm, all of those things come together. And the sense for people in Protestant areas that the word you got the hell of a hand quite really. So when you saw the flags protest start up, did you feel this was something like that?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to draw a direct analogy between the two, because I think there was a lot of different things at play. And when you heard Glenn talking this morning, I mean, he was very definite, and I'm not there to contradict him, because he was helping organise the thing, that it was a constitutional stoppage. It was about the constitution. And I would describe the flag thing as something different than about the constitution, because it settled if only people wakened up and realised that in the Loyalist community. But I do see the remnants. What Glenn talked about this morning was lots of different reasons why people were involved in the strike, and if you had asked any of them, it could have gone from the sort of fascist tendency that some people talked about through sectarianism to this sense of loss, to the sense of siege, to not having a take in government, to, you know, an Irish dimension, which seemed to get played down today quite a lot, actually, when you hear, listen carefully through this morning. So there was lots of different reasons that people were involved there, whereas the flag seems to me to have got something around which people can rally, which is what a flag's about, you know. But what I can't say is that will be short-lived. At some point, people will have to come back to deal with the real issues that face people in this community. At some point, they will have, and always have had, to come back to that. And in a sense, if you want, one of the roles of good community organisation is to keep that fire burning for people to come back to, because they'll have to come back to it. There's one difference, and just interestingly with Henry here, you know, yeah, I'll tell you what the difference would be now. In community development terms, people would be concerned in an event like the strike or whatever of how do the kids get to school and what's happening. I know during the feud in 2000, the Johnny Adair UVF feud in 2000, in the Shankill, once that kicked in on the 19th of August, it was a bad, bad time. It was a local civil war within 1 square mile, and the worst time the Shankill's experienced, I believe, but certainly in my experience. That started on the 19th of August. Within a week of that starting, people started turning their minds to what happens to the kids here in the 1st of September. And people started to organise around that. That would never have happened in 1974. Mm-hmm. It was a different time. That was somebody else's business. And I'd say that as being, you know, we're about to launch, Paul, a big education drive in the Shankill, I hope, before the end of June. And, you know, that's a new issue. That's a new issue that we're, that's at the heart of what we're concerned about. In the 1970s, it was about defending your patch. It's now about the potentially young people. That's a big move forward.
It's huge.
I'm sorry, I have to go. I have to go.
I hope you win.
Thanks, Jack.
Well done, Jack.
Okay, thank you, everybody. Thanks for attending today. And I suppose if we've got any questions, we can carry on afterwards. We go for a drink or. keep forgetting it's Monday instead of Friday, but.